Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today we have a very exciting guest, Calvin Chin. Calvin, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Suja. Really appreciate it. Excited to talk.
Yeah, me too. Well, everyone, Calvin is based in the San Francisco Bay Area, and he does a ton of real estate investing in Airbnb space, multifamily space, long distance. So really excited to hear all about, you know, your journey and how it is that you have grown as a real estate investor. So start us off, Calvin, by sharing a bit about how and why you got into real estate investing in the first place.
Yeah, so I think my story can relate to a lot of people's, where I think I was raised the same way a lot of people are, where you know, you're taught to get good grades in school and get a good job and then climb the corporate ladder until you're 65 years old, have silver hair, and you know, have 2.5 kids and maybe a golden retriever, right? That's literally what I was taught, right? I literally thought that was like what, you know, air quotes, success looked like in life. So yeah, I studied hard, got good grades, went to a good school and got into a tech. You know, I live in the Bay Area here in California, so it's all tech. And I thought that was successful, right? And started to climb the corporate ladder and really figured out quickly that, man, this is pretty empty. Like, this does not seem fulfilling. Like, it was hard for me to fathom, like, this would be what my life would look like for the next 35 years. And, yeah. And so, you know.
What industry were you in?
I was in tech.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I was in technology sales for a long time. Yeah, it's a grind, right? And you would look at your VPs, look at your, you know, people that have the 5-year roadmap of your life, and you're like, whoa. Is that the life I want to live? And
totally.
You're like, holy crap, that's scary. And so I think what a lot of people do is like, all right, well, you know, how can you buy back your time and your energy? Right. And so I looked at a lot of things. I looked at stocks, and my dad's in stocks. So I was like, hey, that's probably what I'm going to do. I'm just going to invest in stocks. Right. And what I figured out was like, hey, I don't sit at the boardroom at Apple, right? I don't sit at the boardroom at Twitter. That's a good current example, right? Like, they made decisions, right? And I didn't love that. I didn't love the lack of control, if you will. Mm-hmm. Cryptocurrency is obviously another thing. Don't understand it and don't pretend like I do. So don't invest in that. And real estate, I was like, you know what? Like, I was renting at the time. I was like, this makes sense. I pay my landlord all the time. They're probably making a bunch of money. Like, this conceptually makes sense to me. So yeah, that's what I dove into. And that's how I got started in the real estate investing journey.
Yeah, for sure. And so you did that with the ultimate goal of in mind already of, you know, not necessarily having to follow in the footsteps of the senior VPs, et cetera, at your company. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And are you still in tech or did you retire or from that space and just do real estate?
I'm retired now. I'm a real estate investor full time.
Very cool. Awesome. And how long has it been since you were able to make that switch?
It's been a few years now. And it's been a weight off the shoulders for sure.
Totally. I know. It's just a huge difference in your life to not have to, you know, just have that huge weight on your shoulders. So.
And I'll ask me too. I mean, it took me a long time. And, you know, even when me and my wife, but when we had enough passive income that even replaced my W-2 income, it took me a couple of years still to like leave because my identity was so wrapped around being in tech sales, right? Like, that's who I was. That's how I got my self-worth, you know? That's where I thought people were proud of me or how I got, you know, any kind of worth in life. And it took me a long time to even realize, like, you know, who I really want to step into as a person. Like, what lifestyle design do I want to live? And that's when I was able to dump that old identity that didn't serve me anymore.
Yeah, for sure. So you're saying you had reached income replacement, but then you stayed in tech sales for another 2 years before finally. Okay. And what was it that just finally allowed you to leave?
It was just understanding like, well, you know, why am I still here kind of thing? And what do I want to do with my life? Like, you know, and actually to be fully transparent, like I remember it was a moment where they were giving me a promotion, right? To take over my team, right? And I was like, oh man, like this is a defining moment of my life. This is a fork in the road kind of thing. I could either choose to you know, continue on the ladder, right, if you will, and take that job and really be committed to that. Or I could say, you know what, like, this has been enough. Like, this is probably the crux of the point where I'm like, you know what, maybe this isn't right. Maybe this is the time I jump off, right, and say, you know, thank you so much for, you know, giving me what I needed out of this. And, you know, it's time to start, you know, I guess the new chapter in life.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting, those things that can cause us to finally make those big decisions to leave or whatnot. And for me, I mean, it just, in my experience, it hasn't exactly been my total will. Like, the first time my company went through a merger and I, you know, I essentially, well, I could have moved to a different city, but instead I chose to be laid off. And then I don't think I would have, I don't know what would have made me leave my career. You know, I mean, it just, it's such as the golden handcuffs, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned that too, Suja, because it's like, those are, it's always like those like crux of moments of like, you know, I got laid off, or, you know, the company went under, or, you know, something happened. And that was when the spark hit, where, you know, you were able to do something else. I even love like COVID, for example. COVID is a great example of that, where usually everyone is in like work mode all the time. Like, you're grind. And you never have time to really think about yourself, what your life wants to be, right? And COVID, I love this, in March 2020, what happened? It was like 2 months of like stoppage, right? And everyone got a chance to just like, well, hang on, like, what do I actually want in life? And for me, at least, and I don't know about you, Suja, but like, everyone I knew either moved somewhere, like either if it's apartment to apartment or house to house or city to city, state to state, whatever it was, or they left their job and did something else, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's a big example of like, wow, like, if you get some time to really focus on, hey, like, what do I really want? Like, you can start to make decisions that, you know, really keep
life. For sure. I mean, yeah, I did make a move. I moved during that time. So it was like definitely a transition, which is a long time coming. So it's, sometimes we need those shakeups, you know. And anyways, okay, so you decided to get into real estate. And what was your first move?
So, well, very first move was a house hack.
Okay. Yes. Classic. Me too.
Right. Like, I think for anyone listening, it's probably the best thing that you can do is just do a house hack. And 100%. I live in a very expensive area. So house hack is almost a necessity at this point in San Francisco. And yeah, so did that. So that was great.
Was that like with roommates or basement apartment or duplex, or how did it go?
So I had a condo that I bought, and it was a one bedroom, one den. My mortgage was like $2,000. Right. And I had a den, and, you know, in San Francisco, you can basically makeshift a room. And that den was tiny. It was basically like you fit like a desk in there.
Yeah.
Size bed maybe. Right. And so, you know, I rented it out to actually a coder who was doing a code academy or a hackathon, whatever they're called. And for $1,200, I mean, I went from $2,000 to $800, which was my monthly, I guess, nut of that. And so, yeah, minimized that by $1,200 every month, and was able to save more and like gain more of my, you know, or make more money and then less of my expenses. And so my profit, I guess, in between was getting bigger and bigger, and that helped save for, you know, the next project.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah. And so you had a roommate basically in the den.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, totally. I mean, it's classic, especially in the Bay Area. And I mean, I did the same thing, except with a lot more people. Like, my first house was like a 5-bedroom house, and yeah, it was a lot of roommates. But, you know, they paid the entire mortgage. So,
and I did the math on it. Like, it was a swing of about like $300,000. Span of how much I think I owned it for like 3 or 4 years, something like that. And it's like, wow, like, that's powerful, right? You swing $300,000 to $400,000. Like, think about all the traps that you get when you're young, right? Like, you student debt, right? You can buy a car, you know, buy a house, get married, right? That's like four big items that you can just be in a big hole in the beginning of your life. And versus, hey, actually, I have, you know, an extra $300,000 to spend on whatever I want, right? Like, that's a difference.
For sure. It is such a huge thing. And I mean, definitely, I feel like for folks who are willing to make that lifestyle leap, to make sure to do it, you know, early on, right? Because I feel like as you get older in life, you're less willing to kind of, well, have a roommate, for example.
You can have like 3 kids and a couple roommates. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So you did a house hack that got you going and excited. And then what did you do?
Okay, so this is where the story gets really interesting, right? So after the house hack, you know, we were reading all the books, listening to podcasts, like trying to really get educated on investing. Because, you know, buying a house hack versus being a true real estate investor, it's a different ballgame, right? So, you know, I think for me, full transparency, I was still very much insecure. I had imposter syndrome about being a real estate investor. You know, didn't feel like I was going to be good enough, you know, to make it, right? If you will, or smart enough, right? And so what I figured I'd do, I was like, hey, you know what? I saved about $100,000 now, me and my wife. And, you know, why don't we just find a flipper that we can just give money to, and then we'll be real estate investors that way. So found a flipper in San Francisco, gave her 100K as a private money lender, handshake agreement. And yeah, the deal went fine. Like, you know, sold for profit, went to the closing table to get our check. And, you know, she was like, hey, I don't have your money. I actually moved it to a development project in Reno, but I'll pay you 12%. Don't worry about it. Right.
Oh man.
Yeah. That, you know, as you can tell from the tone of my story here, you know, it didn't go well for us. I mean, it's been 7 years, never have seen the money since. And, you know, yeah, that was the first foray, if you will, in quote unquote investing. And it sucked. It freaking sucked. Right. I'm not going to say it.
Say 100K.
$100,000. Yeah.
Oh my God. That is a huge amount. So was she just a fraud or what exactly?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it just one, I think when we first met her, I mean, she felt, you know, like a decent human being, right? And felt like she knew what she was doing. And, you know, I think she maybe just got over leveraged and over her skis kind of thing. And, you know, wasn't working in a place of morals, I guess. I don't know. I can't, you know, sit here and try to explain actions of other people, right? But what I can, you know, say is that on the other side, it sucks, right? And I think nowadays I look back and that, you know, I have an energy of forgiveness because of without that opportunity, right? Like I say opportunity now, I use some different words back in the day, but without that opportunity, I think that we wouldn't be the people that we are and we wouldn't be where we are today. Like we needed that butt kick to really, you know, be able to do all the subsequent deals and be the type of people we are. So,
yeah. So how did that transform you and how did you come out of that experience with that mindset?
I mean, I think basically what we said was, all right, well, the situation sucks, but you know, what can we learn from this and how can we never make the same mistake again? Because what we could have done is said, man, this sucks and let's just never invest in real estate again. We tried and that was terrible. And that's what I would say probably the majority of people would do. Maybe we're crazy. I don't know. But you know, we said, all right, like this sucks, but like, what are the things that we learned from this? Like, if you can learn from each situation, and this is my philosophy nowadays, and this is actually part of what I learned was, if you can learn from any kind of mistake that you make, it's never a mistake, right?
Yeah.
It's a learning lesson that you can apply for the next one. And that's exactly what happened. Like, even after that deal, what happened was we had saved up enough money because we were house hacking. So thankfully for that. And I bought my first investment property truly in Dallas, Texas, right? And did it ourselves. But guess what? I still made some mistakes. Right? I didn't account for ACs breaking, you know, my CapEx. And guess what happened in year one? The ACs broke. And so I had to replace that. And, you know, there goes my cash flow for the year. Right. And then, you know, but what I learned from there was, all right, we'll always account for, you know, capital expenditures. And then so the second year or second deal we did, I made sure I accounted for that to make sure my numbers worked and, you know, overlooked some other things, right? Didn't account for some other stuff. And, you know, third deal didn't make that same mistake again. Fourth deal didn't make the same mistake, right? Just kept on growing and learning and gaining momentum and gaining confidence, right? And, you know, that's really what I think caused in the very beginning of like, hey, if we lost 100 grand and we're okay with it, then hey, an AC breaking, we're neutral cash flow, I'll be okay with that.
Yeah, totally. Well, that's a really great mindset. And I mean, I think it's wonderful that you were able to just keep sticking with it and growing and learning. And were you surrounding yourself with other real estate investors? Like, what was there anything that was that helpful to you and how?
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, I think part of that journey was surrounding ourselves with other people that are doing this, like-minded people, you know, picking their brain, being inspired too. I think there's two types of people. One person could say, oh, look at that person. I'm intimidated. I'm scared. I'm going to shrink. Or the other person that says, wow, that's amazing. How do I do that too? Right. And so we took that mentality of like, all right, well, how can we learn from everyone that we're surrounding ourselves with? You know, you always want to be that smallest person in the room or, you know, the dumbest person in the room, if you will. Right. That's when you know you're in the right room because you're only learning. If you're the smartest person all the time, then your ego's high, but you know, you're not learning as much. And
you know, so true.
That was the growth for us was just like, wow, like that concept. That's a wow. Accelerated appreciation. That's so cool. Oh, wow. Like this, you can do this. Like, and so that absolutely helped us grow a lot.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that's such an important point that you want to, that it's so important to get in the room with the room that you want to be in and have that be a room where you are not the smartest person and you have a lot of room to grow to kind of level up to where everyone else is. Mm-hmm. So such an important point. Okay, great. So you started buying multifamily properties. Is that right? Long distance?
Yeah. So then we started scaling up. So those were all single families for the first like four. Then we started buying multifamily and like small like quads and stuff. And then made that jump to apartment complexes, like bigger ones, commercial loans, things like that. So yeah.
Okay, cool. And I mean, I know you do Airbnb too, right? So can you tell me about how you decided to make that leap and what that looks like?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group.
Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, so let me think. What was the first interview? Okay, so one of the first interviews we had, like, completely by accident. I did like a Burr project in Texas, like way back in the day. And what I realized, I was like, all right, like I was netting after the Burr, I got my money back. It was awesome. But I was netting like $150 a month. I was like, all right, great. Like, all right, how many of these am I have to do to get to the number I need to get to? And what I realized, I was like, well, hang on, like this Airbnb thing is actually, I've heard so much about this Airbnb thing. Hey, I actually buy a military base. Like this could work out. Let me run some numbers. Right, so I actually burned it again because equity had gone up, you know, got some money back and then transformed that into an Airbnb, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, you kind of get like a return on equity. Like what kind of equity am I getting? I could have sold it, you know, took the and exchanged it into a better project or bigger project, or I could have just maximized, you know, what I had, right? And said, you know, what's the maximum use of this property? And for that one, it's been Airbnb. It's an awesome, it's, you know, it's doing like, it's in Texas. I think it's like doing like 2-3K a month net, and it's, I have no capital of my own in, right? Because I burned it. Right? It's like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that is amazing. And so how are you managing your, I mean, I do Airbnb as some of the listeners might know. So if, are you doing it like you have a property manager to manage it? And yeah, just tell me about how you're managing it long distance.
Yeah, 100%. So it's always who, not how, right? We always have people on our team to, you know, fit that mold, right? So yeah, either partners or like that one, for example, my little sister is managing it because she wants to get into the game and like learn. So yeah, you know, just depends. Property managers as well, you know, great examples of that. I mean, we always have property manager for almost everything we do. And I think it's one of the biggest mistakes that I ever made in the beginning was trying to self-manage out of state. It's a great experience. Definitely learn a lot from it. You learn what you don't want to do for sure. But with that being said, it's, once you have it, it's great, right? Then you're like, all right, like now I can guide you and kind of give you an idea of, you know, what I saw and what sucked for me.
Yeah. Okay. Now, just because I'm kind of in the space, I do have like sort of a more detailed question, which is what are you paying for property management? If it, like, is it a percentage of revenue? Just curious if you wouldn't mind sharing.
Yeah. Yeah. So we actually do it. And again, everything's negotiable. I think the normal rate for people is like 15 to 30% of your gross revenue. That's like use third party. A couple of deals. So one deal where a Burr and B, what I call it. Cookie Mountains, that one's with a partner. He's a property management team that kind of managed that. So we don't pay him anything. It's just part of the, I guess, partnership. The other few ones we have, we do either about, I think it's like 20% of net profit, right? So not gross, but net. And right? That kind of actually makes a difference as well because
totally
20% of gross, that's a lot more than 20% of net. So we've negotiated about 20% net.
Okay. Okay. Very interesting. And then what is that person responsible for? Like, are they responsible for inventory and, you know, repairs and just like guest messaging and everything else?
Yep. Guest messaging, repairs, inventory, furnitures, air cover potentially, right?
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. So really I shouldn't have to do anything.
Okay, cool. And then as far as a zoning perspective, like, you know, obviously Airbnb does have like an increasingly, you know, the regulatory environment is increasingly complex.
Yeah.
So how have you kind of dealt with that?
A couple of ways. So, you know, one, I always like to say, and I don't know what Portland's market's like, but you know, I like being in markets that have established rules already, like versus unestablished rules. I'll give you an example. Like we're looking at a multifamily in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And awesome B+ class market. It's actually multifamily. I was going to do, you know, some Airbnbs and some long-term rentals. And, you know, throughout the process, you know, when I first got the deal, I was looking at, all right, I was like, cool. Like looking at the laws, like, yeah, it looks like I can, you know, maybe it's zoned for this. I can probably do this, which I just got to apply for a permit. And then 2 weeks later, looked at it again. And they had come up with an ordinance that says, actually, we are putting a memorandum up here that says you cannot Airbnb for non-owner occupied at all.
If you're not owner occupied. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's an example of like a really changing market right now where it's like,
yeah,
it's not established yet. They're still trying to figure it out. And that's scary because you can buy that place with the idea of like, I'm going to do this. Right. And then midway through, they're like, you can't do this. And oh man, like you got to have some backup plans there.
Yeah.
Established areas, Smoky Mountains, for example, in Tennessee, very established area with their laws in place.
Do you Airbnb there?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I mean, I hear that's such a great area because it also just seems like there's just a ton of people that vacation there and they're looking for like big houses and stuff. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Very cool. And okay. So you're looking for places with established rules. Yeah. It does kind of make sense. Yeah. In Portland, we've had rules for a really long time, but like starting in 2015, but then they were not enforcing those rules at all until like, and people were just flagrantly, you know, flaunting the rules until 2020. And so now there's a little bit more, I mean, it is harder to break the rules on a large scale. So yeah, so that's kind of, but so there.
I think to your point too, Sita, sorry to interject there, but.
No, go for it.
Yeah, I think another thing too, is having that backup plan, right? Like, I think it's like, if you only go in with Airbnb and that's all you got and the rules do change, right? It's, you know, I'm a big fan of Warren Buffett's, hey, protect your downside, right? Like anyone can put on a spreadsheet, make a deal look great, but really what's the downside here, right? Like, so in Airbnb, the biggest risk is that, and why the yield is so high in Airbnb right now is that, hey, like anything can change. Like how we've had, I mean, we have an ADU in our house here in the peninsula and we were Airbnb-ing it, unbeknownst knowing that there was even laws around it. And the city slapped us with a rule says, hey, actually no more short-term rentals, right?
Oh my God, really? Yeah, like not even with your ADU?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, we were also making like $5,000 a month on that. I was like, oh my God, like that sucks. But, you know, we had a backup plan and that was, you know,
long-term.
Midterm rents.
Midterm. Okay.
Traveling nurses, corporate housing, things like that.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, $3,500 a month. It's not, you know, not $5,000, but it's not nothing. It's, I mean, our long-term rentals are like 22, right? So, you still have that backup plan in there and, you know, in place to make sure that no matter what happens, you know, you're going to be okay. Whether it's even just breaking even with long-term rentals, right?
And for sure. Like, got to at least, I mean, I would say that is like, I mean, I guess that's my opinion is that like, it has to at least break even with a long-term rental because even the corporate rental market, like you don't know exactly how that's going to shake out. I mean, hopefully it'll, you know, be good and you won't have vacancy issues and whatnot.
100%.
But yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I guess there is a housing crisis in the Bay Area. So that's probably why they're outlawing all, even like a bedroom, you can't even short-term rental a bedroom.
It's city by city basis, right?
So okay.
You can do it in our city. You can do it. Yeah. If you're owner occupied, you can rent out like one bedroom or something like that, or two bedrooms, something, I forget exactly what it is.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah. And there are ordinances here. And, you know, to be honest, like the Bay Area, California in general, tougher states for sure to, you know, Airbnb and make money. So
yeah, for sure. Okay. So in Texas, are there any Airbnb regulations?
Just getting a permit. But the permit process is pretty easy. So,
okay. So they have those established rules though that you're right. Looking.
Minus Austin. We don't have anything in Austin because the permits are a little bit harder to get.
Okay. Good to know. Well, I find that really fascinating. And yeah, I'm just very, you know, always interested in people who are doing the Airbnb long distance thing. So for the Smoky Mountains, like, did you go out there to furnish the property or did you hire someone to do that?
Never been there. Never been to Smoky Mountains. Heard it's beautiful. Okay. It's beautiful.
So did you buy it turnkey? How did you get that area?
No, we actually bought it where we needed a lot of work. So this one I partnered with one of my good friends and he has a property management company out there. And he comes from a project management background where he actually does construction, right? So as part of the arrangement, right, part of our partnership agreement was his duty was to handle that side of the business. My duty was to handle the capital side, right? So almost like a mini syndication, if you will, but more like a joint venture, if you will, partnership.
Yeah.
And so that was the agreement there, right? He was running low on cap. I had capital and I could bring in more capital if we needed that thing. And that's what we did. And that's how we partnered on that deal.
Okay. Very cool. So he handled the furnishing, et cetera.
He handled the furnishing. He handled the operations of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I think this is such a key point that you're speaking to, which is the importance of partnerships, right? Like having those key partnerships where you can be a team, right? Because real estate is a team sport. There's no way that, and you can just do more if you're willing to go outside and, you know, find those right partners.
It's funny you mentioned, I was just talking to my little sister about it. She's like, hey, I'm trying to buy this deal in Sacramento, Airbnb, I'm bringing along capital though. Like, I don't know, it's tight. I don't know if I want to do this deal or not. And I'm like, well, you know, like if you're running along capital, why don't you just partner? I'll partner with you. I don't care.
Yeah.
She's like, no, I kind of worry about myself though. I'm like, well, why? Like, really, like I can't do it if it's by myself. It's like, well, why are you partner then? Right? You either have your time, your capital, your knowledge, right? And you know, I just think it's funny. And it was something that actually, and I'm sure you felt the same way too. I know for me, it was once I kind of got over that of like, I had to control everything. No, it's like, I want to control the things I love doing, right? And my superpower. And I love to outsource and leverage other people if they love doing these other things. So let's do that, right? So that is, I think, super important lesson that I learned in my short career here.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think that is kind of an important lesson. I think it's been kind of hard for me to understand that there's people who want to do things that I don't want to do, but those people are out there, right? And that's what makes a great team. Okay. So I'm curious, Calvin, where it was that your streams of income, like how that led to you replacing your income. I mean, I know you kept working your job for 2 years after that, but like, was it all long-term rental at that point, or what were those streams of income?
Yeah. So it was all real estate, right? All long-term rentals out of states and a couple of like small multifamilies as well. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
And so they were just cash flowing, like equivalent to your, what you were getting from your W-2?
Yeah. I always said it was like, hey, if I could hit 10K a month, total net cash flow, that's what I would do to be comfortable with my job. And then 2 years later, I finally quit.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to make that leap, and the fact that you were able to do that, you told that story. So, but still, it wasn't like you were like you had to leave or something. So it still takes courage to do that. So
it does. Yeah. Like you said before, the golden handcuff. Security is another thing too that you have with the job. You have always knowing that monthly check is coming. You have your benefits. You know, it's easy. It's comfortable, right? Yeah. But I was saying, it's like, hey, you want to be comfortable being uncomfortable, because when you're uncomfortable, that's when the most growth happens.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, it's interesting though, because at some point, like I think I learned at some point that the companies are still going to do what's best for them. And they have like a whole HR department. They pretend that they care about you. But ultimately, if the company is going to be sacrificed, in our case, like a failed merger, then they're going to let go whoever they need to let go. And, of course we could have moved, but still it's just, so that was a reality check for me, is that like the companies ultimately are going to do what's best for them. So I need to do what's best for me. And that means not relying on a company.
Yeah, it's freedom. Get your own control, right? Be the CEO of your life versus, it's like, what the biggest slap on the face is, in my opinion, in corporate? I'm probably gonna get in trouble for this, but I'll say anyways, it's like, you get your annual raise, right? And what is it? Your annual raise is like 2%. You're like, oh, you got an annual raise of 2%, that's awesome. And then you're like, wait, what's inflation? 7%? Oh, snap. So I'm losing 5% every year. Like, that sucks. Right. But people don't understand that. And I, from a corporate structure, they definitely don't understand that. It's like, well, we're going to increase everyone's rate by 7% and lower our revenue or our net operating income by that. Like, I don't think so. Right. But really, it's a people business though. And that's how I like to real estate. It's the same way. Like, it's all about the people, and you treat them right. If you want to have a long-term relationship with someone, you got to treat them right. Right. Like, that's like the most simplistic advice I could ever give, is like, if you want to bring a long-term relationship, treat them right. That's it. Right. Cause they'll be there forever then.
Yeah, for sure. And that's such an important point too, that this is such a people game. And I mean, it's such an important part of real estate, is, and you have to build those teams and have those lasting relationships. Very cool. Okay. So thanks so much, Calvin, for sharing, just so much about your story. It's been really interesting to talk to you, and I know we can go a lot longer, but let's wrap up. Thanks so much. Please share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and your firm and anything else you want to share.
Yeah. So we've kind of really pivoted our mindset around, okay, what we want to do in life, how do we want to serve? And it went from, I think, very achievement focused, which is early on in our career, where we're just looking at investing in real estate and getting passive income that way, to now we're looking at like purpose, right? Like, how do we want to leave this world, right? And for us, it's about leaving an impact on people's lives. So, we started an organization called Zen Coach University, and that's really centered about how can we help people create passive income so that they can go create passive impact in their community. Right, using real estate as a vehicle. So we teach and coach on, how you can do that, how to achieve financial freedom so you can spend time with your family and your friends. And one story that always touches me is like one of my students said to me, like, I was like, hey man, why are you doing this, man? He's like, well, to be honest, man, like one morning, my son came out to me, my 5-year-old son came out to me and said, hey, dad, can you drive me to school? And he looked him in the eye. He's like, son, I can't, I go to work. And he said, after that, changed his life. He's like, dude, I'm making this happen somehow. And so like we say, hey, invest in real estate as a vehicle so that one day you don't have to say no. You can say, heck yeah, let's get ice cream after two.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's awesome. Okay. So you got a coaching program. Thanks so much for sharing that. I hope you guys check it out. What's the link again?
Yeah. So it's thencoastuniversity.com. So VENcoastuniversity.com. I'll drop it in the show notes here.
Okay, perfect. Well, check that out, folks. And we'll make sure that you guys have an opportunity to check out what Calvin's up to. Really great meeting you, Calvin. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.